I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Giannis for three. His third make tonight.
Welcome to the Milwaukee Basketball Hour, presented by Hupie and Abraham and featuring Steve Novak.
With a three. Oh, that may seal it right there. A big-time Brogdon triple.
Now, here's Steve Novak and the big unit, Bill Michaels.
Let me see ya.
Good evening and welcome. We are broadcasting live at Rare Steakhouse, Milwaukee. We are downtown in on Michigan, which is where you can find us. And it is a packed house tonight as Milwaukee Bucks, they have swept the Detroit Pistons. They now wait for the Boston Celtics to get to town. And Malcolm Brogdon will be joining us momentarily. Steve Novak alongside. How you been, man?
I've been good. Like you said, come on. First time the Bucks have won a first-round playoff series in 18 years. That's a little reason to celebrate, no?
Since 2001.
Yeah.
And which was an incredibly memorable run, obviously. Now, how old were you?
I was 17 or 18.
17 or 18.
So I remember.
Okay.
I was
You made me feel bad.
I
was traveling with the team at the time. Covering the team.
I was boys with Kobe Carl, so George Carl's son.
So oh, yeah.
We would sneak into the Cousins Center where the Bucks used to practice, and I would get to see Sam Cassell's shoes.
Oh, wow.
And Big Dog shoes, and I used to think I was the man. Like, oh, I'm friends with the coach's son. I get to sneak in and see where the Bucks practice. Those are Ray Allen shoes.
Yeah.
And that was the last time that they were winning playoff series. So we're back, baby.
Yeah. Malcolm Brogdon joining us up here at the table. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good.
Malcolm Brogdon up here at the table, everybody. Just so we're not doing it in a mausoleum for those that are listening at home or on the road. First question, when are you going to be back?
I don't know.
We're not screwing around, man. When are you going to be back? We need you.
I can't give definite answers, but, we're very hopeful this series and sometime throughout the series.
How you feeling? Let me ask you there.
I feel great. I've made progress the way that I should. I haven't had any setbacks, so we're hoping I sort of continue down this road.
What else do you have to do to kind of get cleared? I guess that might be the best way to put it.
It's really just getting to the point where I'm not, functioning, playing on the court without any pain. I think that's my last hurdle. I've passed a lot of the tests in the weight room, even a lot of stuff on the court. I'm on the court playing. Haven't gotten to sort of competitive playing yet, but I'm getting up and down the court a lot. But it's really moving around without pain.
Are you without pain?
Not yet.
Close. Okay.
Yeah.
We're trying to pin it down.
Like, you just seem so tough. It's like you're trying to talk him into it. Like, you don't have any pain, do you? Get this guy a glass of white wine or something.
Yeah,
he won't feel any pain.
Exactly.
No, but talk to us about this first round against Detroit. I guess we were talking earlier, and I was saying watching it on TV – and watching the game, not being a player on the bench, not being one of the coaches, we realize it's the playoffs. But it seemed like it was still kind of the regular season. You guys were beating teams by more points than any other team in the league, by 9 points per game in the regular season. All of a sudden, the playoffs come. You guys won the four games in the playoffs so far by 24 points per game on average. So it was almost like a step backwards from the regular season, it seemed, because you guys were so dominant. How were you guys able to take that step with you out of the lineup, which is a big deal, right into the playoffs, and be that prepared, that ready? It is a 1-8 matchup, but how are you guys that ready for the playoffs?
I think Coach Bud does a great job of preparing us, being able to gear up and peak at the right time. You see a lot of the teams year in, year out, Boston, the Warriors, they peak at the right time. And I think Bud is a coach that knows how to do that, knows how to prepare us. And I think we've shown our depth in this recent series, having Sterling, having Pat come and fill for me, having other guys contribute off the bench. Getting Nico back is going to be huge. We got him in rhythm the last two games. So I think we're good to go. I think we're getting healthy, and we feel great. We're confident.
When you guys compare yourselves to other teams, not that you really do, but you do have matchups you go by, the one thing that we keep coming back to is this team is so incredibly deep. You just reeled off four or five names, none of which are really have been starters traditionally. But it seems like every night, the last time you and I talked, was everybody's a contributor. One night, Pat ends up with 18 points and a couple of blocks and a great defensive play. The next night, it's Nico. It's just always been somebody. So talk about how Bud has a feel for the team and allowing guys to kind of find themselves throughout a game.
Well, you know, it's not just the starters that he gives confidence to. He instills confidence in everybody on the squad. So when Pat gets in the game, when Sterling gets in the game, he tells those guys to let it fly. He tells those guys to shoot the ball when they're open. He tells them to defend. He tells them to compete just like he tells Giannis. So everybody gets in the game with a lot of confidence, ready to play, ready to score, ready to really contribute in any way they can.
And obviously there's depth. There's guys that can come off the bench and play, but talk about, too, the job that – is it spoken? Is it in the locker room? Coach Bud talks about how important the starting unit is and the start that you guys get off to, because in this Detroit series, the starters, the group of five starters, was outscoring the Pistons' five starters by 33 points per game. So, I agree. It's like Nico comes in, makes shots. G. Hill comes in and gets buckets. Pat Connaughton has 18-9. And I'm trying to figure out, are these guys – are these starters on another team? Is our team that unique? And then I realized our starters were outscoring them by 33 points. How does that happen that the starting group is that much better in a playoff situation? And really, I guess, is that a big part of the opportunity that these bench guys have gotten, is really how good that starting group has been?
Well, you know, I think we have a mixture of a couple things you said. I think we do have starters coming off the bench. I think Nico has been a starter on every other team he's played on, and same with George Hill. George has been a starter on other playoff teams before he came here. So we have guys that are, very well-seasoned vets coming off of our bench. And then it's our style of play, being able to plug in guys with different skill sets, but everybody sort of being able to play the 1 through 5, essentially. You see Brooke a lot of the time trailing in the high quads or in the center of the floor shooting threes. I mean, the versatility of our team allows us, and the starting group especially, allows us to get off to good starts, to start the second half. Especially for us, it's been huge in the second half of the season, getting off to good starts, knowing that we have to do that in the playoffs as well.
To be down by 10 in that ball game yesterday and to end up winning by 23 – and to go in at half and almost as if you flipped a switch. Now, Steve and I were talking before the show. The style of defense they were playing was very aggressive. I mean, they got very physical on the inside, and they were beating on Giannis pretty good. But you just got the sense that there's not a lot of teams that can continually do that and do it for four quarters. And therefore, whenever that little breather starts to happen, you guys are going to take off. Do you get to halftime and go, okay, it's time for us to go now?
Yeah, you know, a lot of games we're able to come out and really sort of impose our will in the first half, but there are games, especially when you're in a series with the team where you're having to play them multiple times, we're not going to get off to a good start. We're not going to have a great first half every game. So for those games, we do go to the locker room, especially against Detroit. We were up 3-0. We just had to take a deep breath, sort of get back to what got us to that point, to get us to that lead, and, play our brand of basketball.
And what about Lopez? You talked about Lopez. I mean, that guy in this series, he seemed like he stood out. And now, obviously, there were games where the starters didn't have to play crazy minutes. But what makes Brooke Lopez such a tough matchup, especially in a series against Detroit?
Man, his size is a bit overwhelming when you see him in person. He is a big guy. And honestly, his timing. So when people look at shot blockers and they look at good defensive big men, they think, oh, he's huge and he's a good athlete. But no, I think it takes skill. I think it takes timing to be able to block shots, to be in the right place at the right time, and a high IQ guy. Brooke is a guy that's mastered not fouling but blocking a lot of shots. That's a hard trait to sort of pick up when you're playing guys like Andre Drummond and Blake Griffin that are monster athletes that are almost as big as he is. But really, he dominated them in this series. So I think Brooke has been really the biggest addition other than Coach Bud for us this season in terms of turning this team around defensively and then offensively spreading the floor.
We had had Pau Gasol on last week, and he said one of the things that he was concentrating on was making sure that everybody knew you get up 3 games to nothing, you can't stop. So what was the mentality going into yesterday's game? It looked like Detroit came out with a ton of energy, maybe either matched your energy or maybe you guys were a little bit off, as you had said. You're already up 3 games to nothing. You kind of felt it a little bit. Is that kind of a start for Detroit that kind of woke, I don't want to say woke you guys up, but kind of, punched you in the face a little bit? Or was it just a matter of you just they did something different and took you out of your rhythm.
You know, I think they I think when NBA players, when professional athletes are playing with their backs against the wall, they have the tendency to rise to the occasion. They're the best in the world at what they do. So I think Detroit came out and showed that they were an NBA team as well. And they came out, they made shots. That first half, they played actually a stellar first half. At the end of the half, Reggie Jackson caught a tip dunk on somebody. I mean, they were playing very good basketball. But, you know, we understood they were going to come out, throw a big punch. We just had to be able to respond before it was too late. And we were able to do that in the second half.
What about your boy Thon Maker? There was playoff Thon, right? When he was with the Bucks, it was playoff Thon. I think he was like 0 for 15 from three in the series. Is it only playoff on the Bucks, Thon? Is he gonna? What happened? Is he gonna?
I'm not worried about Thon. Thon, you know,
was it weird? Was it weird playing? I mean, it was one of your guys. Was it weird playing against him? Or
for sure, there was actually one point in the game where he's at the free throw line and he makes a free throw, and I almost start clapping. I'm sitting at the end of the bench, and I'm like, I got to relax. Because, you know, he struggles shooting the ball a little bit, but at the same time, you got to look at his situation. He got traded there in the last 20 games of the season. And it's hard to, you know, step onto a new team, at times be starting and have to pick up a new role, a new rhythm, and play, and then come back and play against the MVP. It's tough.
What did it do to that locker room when Thon was traded? Because I know there was a lot of guys that spoke real highly of him, just as the personality inside that locker room.
Thon was beloved for sure. I think in Milwaukee, I think.
Is it close enough to have an intervention to say, Thon, you should never shoot a three again?
Not in this system.
But Thon is definitely missed. Sort of his energy and his, I would just say his positivity every day. He was a guy that even on the worst days when we weren't playing well, when things weren't going right, Thon always came in. He was like a light for everybody, especially for me. So it was honestly good to see him again. Good to see him playing out there. But I'm sure he's going to do well.
What'd you guys take away from this first round? Now, I mean, not just because the city was, you know, excited and Bucks Nation is excited because you get out of the first round for the first time since 2001, but just inside that locker room, inside those walls, what'd you guys take away from this first playoff series?
We honestly felt like it was an accomplishment. I don't think we took it for granted that we made it out of the first round, even though that's what was expected of us. But at the same time, that's not something we're extremely happy about. We sort of expected that. People sort of relished in it. And, you know, while we were in the locker room after the game, then after that, we're really moving on. We really wanted to win that last game so that we would have the proper amount of rest like the Celtics are having before we play them.
We're going to go ahead and take a quick break. It is the Milwaukee Basketball Hour presented by Hupe and Abraham. We are broadcasting live down here at Rare Milwaukee. Come on by and say hi. We got more with Malcolm Brogdon coming up right after this. Welcome back. It's the Milwaukee Basketball Hour, and we are presented by our good friends over at Hupe and Abraham. They bring you the injury report, by the way. Call Hupe and Abraham, you know, voted best, rated best year after year. Jason's in the house, and he's been done doing the world traveling and giving Tiger Woods advice down at the Masters and all that kind of stuff, and Jason's everywhere. He's like the wind, man. But they also bring you the injury report. Pau Gasol right now, he has the ankle, and they hope to get him back soon. And as we're sitting here talking to Malcolm Brogdon, he gave us the update when he's ready. No pain, and he hopes to be back this series, which is very, very good news. Steve Novak alongside. I'm Bill Michaels, and we are here at the Rare Steakhouse, Milwaukee. And, yes, by all means, for those that want to give it up for the beef and the seafood, this place is fantastic. And we can't say thanks enough to not only the owner who was in the house tonight, but the general manager and all the different people down here taking care of us. And I had said all week long, if you're going to come, better call ahead and get a seat because it's not big. So I expected it to be a little bit more full than it was last week. You know, we had Powell in, and Powell's a kind of a guy with some rings, and he brings some swag to it. But when you come out of a postseason win,
yeah,
and a 4-0 sweep, and this place fills up real quick. So I can only imagine. I was saying, if this thing goes to the NBA Finals, which, by the way, we expect you to, that they're going to have to build an auditorium down here. And you have to come back and join us. Malcolm Brogdon alongside. So, you know, I don't want to dwell too long on Detroit, but I thought a couple of things. First of all, it has become evident that the Fiserv Forum is not only a place of comfort, but a place of extreme confidence for this team. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Definitely.
And then in addition to that, the way you guys took their best shots and never wavered, and it got chippy, and you could have lost your head. Anybody could have lost their head. It seemed like Powell was here last week, and he said, you know, one of the things I keep telling the guys is don't lose the moment. Just stay in the moment. And he was telling Steve and I, that's one of the things he's trying to kind of teach some of the younger guys, that when it gets like this, it's going to get physical, seeing the same guy every day. Try not to lose your head. How difficult is it when guys, and you've been in that situation, obviously, how difficult is it just to kind of remain in the moment? Just, you got to think before you do something stupid.
It can definitely be difficult. For me personally, I'm not a guy that really gets riled up. I sort of keep it calm, collective through the whole game. It doesn't really matter what the circumstances, but there are guys that play with their heart on their sleeve a little bit more and are a little bit more emotional. So I think during the playoffs it definitely can. You know, during the NBA playoffs it's a different game. It's a different level, a different intensity. The refs don't really call. I think the refs cut their foul calls in half. So as you can see against Detroit, the game was way more physical than it had been, you know, when we played them previous times during the regular season. And going into Boston, that's even a more physical team. And we're going to have to be able to, you know, stay calm, stay cool when we, you know, don't get a call that we don't like.
Before I give it to Steve, because I know Steve's got questions about this, but Boston, since you brought it up, is this one you circled? This is one that's been tough for this team to get past. And then after last year and kind of coming back with a bittersweet taste in your mouth, is this one you circled and said, we want to get to the Eastern Conference Finals, but this is the way we want to go because we want to knock Boston off.
Absolutely. We want to get to the Eastern Conference Finals, but we wanted to play Boston on the way. So this is rightfully due for us. We feel like that we owe them back from last year, and it's the perfect time for us.
And what will the prep look like with this kind of time and in the playoffs, different than regular season? Just to give people an idea, what does the schedule look like? Obviously, you guys don't know if you play Saturday, Sunday, or Monday to start the series yet, but kind of what is the progression and what is the focus put on? Is it a lot of film? Are you guys on the floor a lot? Is it totally focused in on taking away their greatest strength? How does it kind of look, do you think, over the next few days prepping for Boston?
Well, you know, we talked to Bud talked to us on the plane right before we got off last night, and his message was really recovering, sort of resting our minds, resting our bodies, and, sort of ramping up as the week goes on. So today we had a complete off day. Unless you're in rehab like me or Dante, those are the only guys that came in and really worked out. Everybody else, it was a lockout day. So lockout days are more than off days. You're not allowed to come into the gym. Tomorrow will be more of a skill day. Go in there, do 20-minute workouts, extremely light. Then the next day, we might have a light practice and a little bit of film. And then the following day, we'll actually, you know, really rev it up, play a little bit of 5-on-5 scrimmaging, sort of the day or two leading up to the game.
What is the difference between this team this year and that team last year? And I'm talking about you guys inside your locker room.
I think it's the confidence that our coach puts in us and the system he's sort of put in place. I think it's really that simple. I think Coach Bud has made all the difference. The way he allows us to shoot the ball, the way he allows us to, sort of defend without having to pay attention to too many details. As a fan, you don't really see what the rotations are, what you're supposed to be doing out there. And when you have a coach or you have someone that's over-coaching or not coaching enough, and Bud really has a great balance. He's not a guy that focuses so hard on the details that he's, you know, getting on you after every mistake or every messed up play. He's a guy that sort of lets you learn, and at the beginning of the game, he wants you to get off to a good start, but you're allowed to make a few mistakes and sort of get settled in. And the players, you know, really like that feel.
No, it is unbelievable watching him coach, because it's cool sometimes to see, no matter who messes up on a defensive coverage, even if it's in the first minute of a game, he'll take that time out and he'll yell at you. He'll yell at Giannis. Do you guys really appreciate that? Do you feel like because sometimes I watch him work the referees as well. Do you really feel like the way that he talks to Giannis, he can talk to the 15th man, and there is an understood respect in that locker room, that because he does that, it really does create a culture of accountability for you guys?
Absolutely. You know, I think you were in the league for a long time. You can speak to this, but he comes from Pop. He comes from the Spurs, and I think that's what Pop is most credited with. He's willing to, you know, talk down to his best player as much as he is the last guy on the roster. So we have film sessions where, you know, we'll watch 8 clips of a game, and 6 or 7 of them are Giannis, and he's getting on Giannis the most. But it sends a message. Even though clearly Giannis might have had 40 points in that game and we won the game because of him, coach wants to point out, like, look, Giannis might be our guy, but Giannis still makes mistakes and there's still room for him to improve, so everybody can improve. So when I get on you, nobody has any, you know, leeway to say anything.
Going into this Boston series, you guys have obviously gotten them at one point this season, so a little bit of confidence there, or the fact that you've faced them a couple of times and you've gotten them a couple of times, I mean, does that regular season just say, you know what, it's postseason now, it's completely different?
A lot of confidence. A lot of confidence because we've beaten them 2-1 in the series during the season. But also the way we played, I think we have a lot of confidence in ourselves because of the way we've played throughout the season, not just against Boston. I think we've built sort of this fine-tuned machine. And, you know, when we're right, I don't think anybody can beat us, and that's what we really believe.
Is the streaks you guys went on this year and the scoring differential, it wasn't by a little, it was by a lot. You were beating teams by 10-plus on average throughout the season. You had one of the biggest scoring differentials in all the NBAs. As a matter of fact, you had the biggest. But the fact that, does that lead to a confidence to know that there was this ability at times to almost just turn it on and just to be able to say, okay, we can not only do it offensively, but you guys did it a lot defensively this year too.
Right. You know, Coach Bud is not just a, you know, everybody hears the quote, let it fly, and just shoot threes and stuff. But Coach Bud focuses on the defense a lot more than the offense. And that's what's really propelled us to play this well this season. We've had stretches where shots haven't fallen, where we've missed a lot of threes, where everybody's been cold. But it's been our defense and our ability to stay disciplined on the defensive end that's, you know, allowed us to win games.
It seemed like against Detroit early on, Steve, and you were doing the analyzation, I was watching, that's what you did. You frustrated him. Drummond alone had a lot of one-footers that just didn't go in because he always had a hand in his face, always had somebody contesting a shot. And it seemed like the hands, more than anything, is what really led defensively to a lot of transition basketball and a lot of missed shots for Detroit.
Yeah, and I agree. I think the way you guys set the tone, you talked about this earlier, you know, coming out in game one against Boston and setting that tone, it seemed like against Detroit in game one, I think it was 38-18 in the first quarter. And it seemed like a lot of people, by about halftime, when you guys were up by about 43 at some point in that game, you kind of knew that series was over. And so you set the tone with your defense by holding those guys to 18. And then offensively, you get going. And I think you almost looked over at the Detroit bench, and you thought, I think they're thinking the same thing right now, too. They're realizing, we kind of hoped we could play with these guys, but defensively, you guys are doing things. Offensively, you're doing things. You have mismatches. I think it did seem really overwhelming. And now looking at this Boston series, last year, Kyrie, Gordon Hayward, not on the court for Boston. Those guys are obviously playing this year. What does Kyrie bring to this Boston team and add that's going to be different than obviously the playoff series specifically last year?
Well, he's a closer. You know, you watch Detroit, you watch some of these teams that don't really have a closer, that don't have a guy that they can definitely go to get a tough bucket at the end of the game and hit a shot. The best teams in the NBA, the teams that go the furthest in the playoffs, have closers. And, you know, them having Kyrie, now they have a closer, someone that can hit tough shots or make the right play at the end of the game to get somebody a good shot. So, you know, adding him, then adding a guy like Gordon Hayward that's, you know, pretty versatile. He's struggled this season coming back from injury. I actually get the mental and how hard that can be. But as of late, he's played better. Marcus Smart going down, he's had to step up. Other guys have had to step up. So I think the team is clicking on all cylinders now. So it will be an exciting series.
I read that your bench outscored other benches in the NBA on season average by 8 points. It was like 8.2 or something like that throughout many of the wins. Do you guys feel like you can send waves at teams? And even if you don't have the talent to match up, you just have so many waves you could just wear somebody down.
Absolutely. You know, you look at our bench, and we have starters coming off of our bench. Nico Ersan at one point was a starter for many of his years in the NBA, and then George Hill. George Hill was almost an all-star a few of his years in Utah and Indiana. So you have guys like that coming off the bench. I think it's a credit to our GM, John Horst, that's done a terrific job with our roster and bringing guys and, you know, having depth and having talent coming off the bench.
Going to go ahead and take a quick break. We are broadcasting live down here at Rare Steakhouse, Milwaukee. If you want to stop by, say hi. Come on in. Speaking of George Hill, George Hill is the Cousins sub of the week. George Hill, great play off the bench all throughout the Detroit seasons. Kudos to him as well. We got more with Malcolm Brogdon, Steve Novak. I'm Bill Michaels. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. We are glad you are here. We are at Rare Steakhouse Milwaukee, which is not that rare anymore because everybody's finding out about it. It's the Milwaukee Basketball Hour. I'm Bill Michaels alongside Steve Novak and Malcolm Brogdon here, our special guest tonight from the Milwaukee Bucks. Bucks sweep the Detroit Pistons 4-0. They move on. Now they go to Boston. They get Boston. Boston comes here. But nevertheless, by the way, I got to say thanks to some of our great sponsors, Hupie and Abraham, also our friends at Baker Tilly, Cousin Subs, the Green Bay Legends Cruise, also Baird Private Wealth Management, and we can't forget about our friends at the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation of Wisconsin. Thanks to them for all being a part of the program. So, Malcolm, we had talked a little bit about Boston And, yeah, you want to go through Boston. You want to get to the Eastern Conference Finals in doing so. What challenges this year with Kyrie does Boston present as opposed to last year without Kyrie?
You know, as I said earlier, I think a closer, someone that they can give the ball to in the last minute that can make shots. But just another lethal scorer. You know, Kyrie is one of the best players in the NBA, and his ability to impact the game from beginning to end, especially as a ball handler, as a point guard, you know, and I think in the playoffs, especially nowadays with the shooting that's gone on, I think you win games with guard play. And to have, you know, a lethal elite guard like him, adding him to the lineup is you know, going to be a game changer for him.
There's always a guy that tends to get a team. You know, there's always one guy that just plays well. Is there anything you can do to stop Al Horford? It seems like every game against the Bucks, Al Horford has a big game, like a career game.
I think Al Horford is actually very underrated. I think he's been underrated his entire career, especially with Boston. He's been underrated. He's smart. He's a heady guy. He's extremely skilled. He makes the right decisions at the right time, and he's extremely consistent. He's a guy I have a lot of respect for in terms of enjoying watching him play. But he's a guy I think we can frustrate with adjustments. I think in the past we've always, off of ball screens, if you watch us, we have Brooks sit in the paint to make sure we can contest shots at the rim, so they have to shoot a lot of mid-range shots. Al Horford is usually a guy to sort of counter our adjustment. They have Al Horford screen, and then he pops to the three and shoots a lot of threes at the top of the key. So I think we're going to have to make adjustments in terms of getting out there, having Brook out there, challenging him a little bit more, and being higher on ball screens.
I really hope somewhere in Boston they're having a radio show right now and they're saying, how do we stop Chris Middleton? Because I feel like Chris Middleton was that to Boston.
Right.
It was like Middleton played 40 minutes a game last series against Boston, averaged 25 points a game, I think averaged 28 points a game in Boston, and shot 61% from three. So maybe Chris Middleton is our kryptonite to their Al Horford. But obviously the series last year went four games. They won in Boston, three games Milwaukee won here. How important, what is home court, having home court all the way through the finals mean for Milwaukee?
It's huge. So when you look at these teams that are advancing every round, as you get farther, you're playing teams that are more compatible to you, teams that are, you know, have similar records in the regular season and a similar you know, talent structure on the team, a similar roster. So, you know, teams that are very evenly, you know, compared, I think what was your question?
I was saying home court, you know.
Home court. So when the teams are very evenly sort of, you can compare the talent and everybody's sort of even across the top, I think home court advantage is sort of the thing that tips the scale. For Boston, the series last year went seven games. Game seven was really tipped the scale, and it was them playing at home. So I think us having that, unless we can beat them in four, five, or six games, us having game seven here will be the tipping of the scale.
It used to be Bucks and six.
I picked Bucks and six.
Look, but
that's what I took.
People are saying Bucks and four is fine.
Yeah. You don't have to go six.
Yeah.
If you don't want to.
We'll see. Yeah.
They're well on their way to being below the average of Bucks and six with already a sweep.
Speaking of last year, Eric did not have a great series against Boston. It was one of those series, I think, by the end of the year, and he even said to us he wanted back. Is there anything sitting in him that you know of that he's sitting there going, man, I got to get Boston. I want Boston back, because he didn't have a great series.
I mean, as a competitor, I would assume so. I'd assume that he wants to, whether it's go at Rozier, go at, you know, the Celtics as a whole. But I think the way he's played this series, the way, you know, Coach Bud has sort of given him confidence, and the way he's played, you know, throughout the entire season, he's played like an all-star. So, you know, I don't think we'll have any problems with Bled playing well this series.
Is there a different feel, though, and you've touched on it a little bit, because you guys have a little bit of history because of last year with Boston? Nico Mirotic was interviewed last night after the game. He talked about, look, I wasn't here with the Bucks last year when they lost to Boston, but he said they beat me in the playoffs last time. I have a really bad taste in my mouth. I want back at Boston. We're talking about Bledsoe kind of wanting to play Boston again. Is this series against Milwaukee going to make the Boston-Milwaukee matchup a rivalry? Is it too soon to start saying that this is the – you two teams are
– I think it already is a rivalry. I think after last year, taking it to Game 7, I think we took a lot out of them last year. They beat us. They outplayed us. But, you know, I think that's a great organization that's been great for years. And I think we're an organization that was at the top of the game, had a few drought years, and now we're getting back to the top. and we're at the top now. So I think it's going to be a rivalry for the years to come.
When you talk to guys around the league, and guys talk, and when you talk to guys around the league, do they ask you about this situation here in Milwaukee?
The only thing guys really talk about is the sort of the difference in style of play, how much better we are this year, and then they ask about sort of free agency this summer and how the Bucks are going to approach it. And my answer to that is I don't know. We're focusing on, you know, what we got to do right now.
Yeah. We had George Hill on, and George, I had said, is it, you know, does Giannis or anybody on the team kind of solicit free agents and say, hey, great place to come, good city, that kind of thing. And George got defensive. He said, we don't want anybody else. We're really comfortable right now inside his locker room. We're good, man. Just pay all of us and we're good.
Right.
Is that the way you feel? That we you know, because the picture that's painted is you guys do almost everything together. You're just – it's not a basketball team. It's a group of brothers. You know, I mean, it's a group of guys. It's just family that just hangs out together. Do you get a sense that you're on the precipice of accomplishing something really unique for this city, but also you may not be together next year? Who knows? But you've got something really good right now that you guys need to capitalize on?
Right, and that's the focus. Our focus isn't on free agency or, you know, even the finals right now. Our focus is on making it through each round. And, you know, the free agency can be a huge distraction for teams. In the past, I think it's been a distraction for teams. And even you look at the Warriors, that's come up, and that's somewhat been a distraction for them. But we're not a team that, you know, really allows distractions to get in front of us. We are so set on our goal of, you know, pushing 1 foot forward, winning the next game, winning the series. You know, I don't see anything getting in our way right now.
And is there an internal message that kind of has this group that way? Because it seems like you said, so Golden State's had their drama with, you know, guys not getting along. In Philly, it was Jimmy Butler questioning the system and that kind of thing. There's been no talk of anything like that, whether it's player drama or guys questioning the coach or anything like that. What is the factor? What is the element? Is it leadership with this Bucks team? Is it just winning overcomes all things? How have you guys been able to? It seems like from training camp to now, it's like you guys won 60 games. You just swept in the playoffs. What's been the factor? What is it that has made you guys able to have such a, what appears from the outside, a smooth journey?
I think it's the culture that Coach Bud has brought with him, from the coaching staff, you know, our front office as well. But I think the guys that also our GM has brought in, the free agents, they've been a lot like the guys that are already here. We don't have anybody with a huge ego. And I think with championship teams, you go as your leader goes. And having a guy like Giannis, Giannis is 22, 23 years old, still sort of developing on the court and off the court. He's not a guy with a huge ego. He's, you know, arguably probably he's going to be the MVP this year. He's the best in the NBA at this point, and he doesn't have a huge ego. You can still go to him and tell him, you know, Giannis, like, next play you have to look out for this because they're going to do this, and he'll be like, okay, I'll do that. Like, you don't see guys like
right.
that, you know. So having guys like that, having guys like Bled and Chris, that, you know, they're pretty low-key guys that they don't want the attention, they don't want the sort of the fame. They just want to play basketball and win games, so it helps us stay together as a group.
I know you got some veterans on this team, and George and Powell, that have been there, done that, but the last time this team won a playoff series, Darvin Ham was a player. Does Darvin Ham talk about, you know, hey, when we were here, this is kind of the culture we put together? Because this was voted the best fan base, the best sixth man in the entire National Basketball Association at the time. Sporting News did a poll, and they said it was Milwaukee, and you kind of reinstilled that in this city and in this Bucks Nation. Does Darvin ever say, hey, when we were here, we owned this place?
You know, Darvin talks about how much he loved it here, how great the fans were, and how great the fans are now. But he's not a guy that really talks about his heyday. He really lets us live, lets us play, and doesn't really want to draw any attention for what we're doing right now.
That man would come in, get three of the most malicious fouls you would ever see. He'd bust a backboard, and then he'd leave. And it was great. He was a great energy guy.
Wait, Thon Maker without a busted backboard?
Yeah.
He was fouling Giannis, wasn't he?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
He was something else. But I want to go back on a little something on Giannis with the playoffs. Just obviously this is a team sport, and the best teams are who win in the playoffs. But how important is it knowing that you have the best player? Because people talk about having the best player in a playoff series and the difference that makes or doesn't make, how important that is. Knowing that the Milwaukee Bucks have Giannis on their team, they are going to have the best player in every single series from here on out. What does that mean? How important is that in the playoffs?
Well, it gives the rest of us confidence that, you know, no matter how we play when we go out, Giannis is at least going to give us a chance. He's that great. So for us, it's at least going out and playing pretty well, and Giannis can really carry the rest of the weight. So, you know, he's been great. Giannis makes plays. Last night, being able to sit out and actually watch Giannis play has actually been pretty cool. I've been sort of a fan watching the game last night. He comes down and makes blocks, and it's amazing. And I finally see what fans see. The plays he makes on offense, it's amazing. But, you know, he's a guy I have immense respect for because of his work ethic, because of the way he carries himself, his humility. But having a guy like that on your team, you feel like you can do anything.
Did he say anything or Thon say anything to him when he swatted Thon's shot into maybe the fifth row?
Some of those blocks.
No, some of those did, blocks,
he
yeah.
did have some blocks in that series. That might have been some of,
but the one he slapped away from Thon was must have shadowed him like a pterodactyl coming in from
landing. You know, Giannis is a dominating presence, and Giannis wants to make a point when he's on the court. So he doesn't want Thon to think that he can come in here and play with him and compete with him. Giannis wants to dominate everybody he plays against. But the way Giannis does it is in class. He's not a guy that's going to scream and celebrate and look at the camera. He's a guy that's going to block the shot and then try to block it again. So, you know, that's a guy that I think people fear on other teams.
And the Detroit series, look, the Bucks, you guys did a great job of creating leads and everything and winning game one, winning game two, winning game three. But game four was the first closeout game. And I know it wasn't game seven. But I do think it was interesting watching, all right, Detroit threw a punch in that first half.
Yeah, they did.
And Giannis had 17 points at half, and he finishes with 41. He absolutely took over in that game. So although it was only game four, not a game seven, it was still a closeout game. Giannis's first close game, and he had a big-time performance, and I thought to myself, look, he's shown himself a little bit, even though it's against Detroit.
One of the things
the first three,
that
he showed something.
I thought was so telling about that game was he finished it at the line. He put up most of his points at the line. And what he did, again, it goes back to the physicality with which Detroit played, but he came out at half before they were even done with the light show. He was already on the free throw line working on his free throws because he knew he was going to end up getting there if he kept taking the ball inside. And he ended up scoring a majority of his points from the line. Yeah. It wasn't even inside dunks and slams. And, you know, he hit a few shots from the outside, but it was from the line, something that he don't traditionally get a chance to do very often other than, you know, here in the postseason because Detroit was beating up on him. Hey, by the way, if you want to follow the program, you can go to MKE B-Ball Hour on all the social media platforms, Instagram, Facebook, also on Twitter as well. That's MKE B-Ball Hour. Final segment of the show here at Rare Steakhouse Milwaukee right after this.
Giannis for three. His third.
Welcome to the Milwaukee Basketball Hour, presented by Hupe and Abraham and featuring Steve Novak.
With a three, oh, that may seal it right there. A big-time Brogdon triple.
Now, here's Steve Novak and the big unit, Bill Michaels.
Welcome back to the program. It is the Milwaukee Basketball Hour. We are here at Rare Steakhouse Milwaukee, and come on by. It is a packed house. And the only thing I can tell you is as this season goes on, and I'm thinking it's going to go on for maybe another month and a half, Steve Novak, it is going to get more and more crowded down here.
No, it's going to get more crowded at Fiserv Plaza. Did you see the watch party?
It was fantastic, wasn't it?
Well, the first game it was snowing, so that was not fantastic. But last night
was – well, you had rain last night and thunderstorms.
And they were
still out there. It was fantastic. It's been to watch, and I had mentioned it before, when the Sporting News said that this was the best fan base in the land back in 2000, 2001, when this thing was really up and cranking, I think a lot of people, not only in Milwaukee, but a lot of listening on the network, a lot of people all over the state of Wisconsin really took pride in what the Bucks had to offer, and they were rejuvenated. I said today, I have never seen a head coach enter an arena to get a standing ovation. Remember, George Karl used to walk in, and the place would just erupt. I mean, you had Ray Allen and Glenn Robinson, Sam Cassell. Scotty Williams was kind of a glue guy. You had all these different really solid players, but George Karl would come in and get a standing ovation. So my point being is this town appreciated basketball and appreciated what was going on. I think after getting a taste of that and then having that be exiled from people for so long, they now have a almost not only an unquenchable thirst for it, but a desire for it. And that's why I think people are more and more appreciative of what's going on with Malcolm Brogdon here, the Milwaukee Bucks, and this Bucks team. So the last time you and I talked, we were kind of talking, Malcolm, about, you know, the fan base and just how, you know, you enjoyed the city and such. So tell me how it's changed now. You guys are, again, another playoff run, best record in the NBA. You guys have a lot of national publicity, even though some of the pundits are still saying, hey, they haven't been there, done that, so until they do, prove it. But tell me how the city has been in outreaching towards you and all these guys in this team.
I mean, the city has embraced us. I thought the support last year, my last 2 years in the playoffs, first against the Raptors, then last year against Boston, I thought it was terrific. And, you know, to see what the city has done for us this year, sort of the energy they've given us, the crowd that shows up to every game, I think it beats every other arena in the NBA. I think it's been better than, you know, people talk about Utah. People talk about Boston. Our fans are far better. So it's been amazing.
Has it been louder at the Fiserv? Have you noticed a difference at Fiserv versus? Okay.
Absolutely. It's been extremely loud. I guess the way they constructed the actual arena allows it so that the sound is louder or something like that. But it gets extremely loud. And the players pay attention to stuff like that. Like, as much as we block out distractions, as much as we're focused on the game, we pay attention to how loud it is and how engaged the fans are.
So going back to talking about other players and other players around the league, and they talk about your experience in Milwaukee, Powell was here, and he said, you know, it was kind of like Milwaukee was the exile, is where you didn't want to go. And now he said, this is where, after 5 years, this is where I want to be. You know, do you get the sense of guys in that locker room that, and you talked about, nobody's looking really for free agent, nobody's talking about, do you get the sense a lot of people, Bledsoe said the same thing. He said, hey, he was going to lean over to Chris Middleton and say, hey, you're not leaving me, man. You're not leaving, you're staying. Do you get the sense that guys are now, this is home, this is where you got to be?
Yeah, I mean, when you win like this, it's hard to leave a situation where you're winning. And, you know, to have the group we have right now, it's pretty special in terms of not only just the talent and stuff, but sort of the personalities and the egos that have been put together. They complement each other very well. No one is really overshadowing anybody else, like, drastically. So it's a great mixture of guys.
Oh, and I can speak to being on a few teams. I was on 9 teams in 11 years, and I mean, to hear what Malcolm's saying, right? It's like when you come to a place and the practice facility's big time, the arena's brand new, you're winning, you like your coach, you're being given opportunity, there's the building is full, and then you find out after the game, oh, and by the way, there are 20,000 people outside watching the game as well. You know, and you go to restaurants and people are respectful and you're supportive and you're in a good environment. Like you said, I do feel like Milwaukee right now is going through a renaissance, a rejuvenation, and I think there's a ton of credit that has to be given to this ownership group to have had the vision to do the things that they've done, because it does create an excitement, Malcolm, like what you're talking about. Guys know that there's the Plaza out there, that there's cool spots, that there's fans watching the game, because now they're putting out Instagram pictures of 20,000 fans for a Bucks game watching the Bucks that aren't even inside. And I remember playing for Toronto in the playoff series. There were tens of thousands of people in the street, and you realized, oh, my gosh, we're playing for an entire country in Canada.
Yeah,
right.
It's building. It's feeling like that here, and it really does feel like a rejuvenation. And it's a huge credit to you guys. You guys have won the games and, you know, made the games exciting to watch for a lot of us, right? We've watched every game, 82 games, now the playoffs. It's enjoyable to watch that many basketball games because you're playing unselfish. You guys obviously have a great chemistry, and now it's like the playoffs are here. And we were having the conversation, like, what did you guys celebrate like after you won? You said, we were happy. It was an accomplishment. But the fans, they should be going crazy.
They're
like you said,
minds.
They've been watching for 18 years, haven't won a series. So I think the fans are rightfully feeling really good right now. And, you know, these guys are grinding, so you can have a confidence in them.
Interesting. Bud said the guys are going to celebrate tonight, kind of take a day off, and then get back at it. Did you feel there's the celebration? You talked about it a little bit in the locker room. Guys were like, all right, got out of the first round. And then it was all of a sudden, it was like, back to work.
Oh, yeah, that just felt like an away game, that last game. It felt like after the game, we got back on the bus, and guys were focused on the next game, the next series. So there was a little bit of celebration, but I'm not going to lie and say we were ecstatic. We were happy, and we appreciated being able to get through that series healthy and winning, but you know, we're focused on the next one.
You had some fans late at night greeting you guys at the airport.
We did. It was awesome.
Kind of neat.
I'm not sure how many, maybe 70. I'm not sure. 50. But it was nice to have them out there by our cars when we got back. Sort of, you know, cheering us on.
Yeah. And it's only going to grow.
It's only going to grow. They're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
There's people out at the airport.
Does it take? And this will be the last one because I know we got to run. But does it take away winning there instead of winning at home? Or does it matter? Once you get in the locker room, you know you've advanced.
I think it's harder to win away, of course. It's more of a feat. But, you know, I think winning is winning wherever you do it. And to get through a series is a huge milestone for us.
Great to have you along. Appreciate it so much. Malcolm Brogdon. Steve Novak. I'm Bill Michaels. Don't forget, follow us on MKE B-Ball Hour and all the social media platforms. Bucks are going to be hosting Boston, and we're right back here again next week. Just keep checking the social media for the time and the date and the guest and all that kind of good stuff. But thanks to everybody for coming out tonight. Have a great one. Get home safe. See ya.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.